Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate.
All right. Welcome back to the next episode of the Great Retirement Debate. Ed, good to be back with you once again.
Yeah, you too. We have an interesting topic today, one that I've been getting questions on for over 30 years from working with clients when they're doing their estate plans.
That's a long time. This must be a good question.
Yeah. Should I treat my children equally when it comes to inheritances?
Probably depends on which child you ask, right?
It's a serious issue now. In fact, lately there's a move to stress tests. I'm just reading about this, estate plans while you're alive to see if they'll hold up, because what I just said is really a bombshell there, because it all happens sometimes without the children ever knowing until the parent has died.
So I want to get into this topic of should I treat my children equally or not, but tell me more about this stress test. It sounds interesting.
Well, there are ways certain states will pre-validate. They call it pre-mortem validations of wills and even trusts, so you know whatever plan you have that might be attacked, that's the ones that you would do this on, that might be attacked is validated while you were alive to make these plans. So there's no question after death if somebody contests it, because let's face it, if there's enough money involved, it's going to be contested.
Yes, yes.
So it can be validated while you're alive. This is kind of very new. Just started reading about it, but I understand why, because of all the problems after death when one child, and it doesn't even matter really what I found, if one child is very successful and one child isn't, they still want to be equal.
So when you say they still, you mean the kids or the
kids?
Parents? Okay.
Both. Okay. No, you're right. It's more the parents. Myself as a parent, I want to do for my children equally. It's just the way I think. Mm-hmm. But the children, you're right about that. It's the children may not think that way. They will say, well, he's so successful. He's got all this money. I should get more. Parents may not think that way. In most cases, the parents that I spoke to, although there have been some cases the other way, they want to be equal because that's how they always thought about their children.
All right, so let me ask you a question. Tell me what equal means to you.
That brings up a good point. I think I know where you're going with that. They receive equal inheritances. If the estate is $5 million, somehow they end up with $2.5 million each. But I think where you're going, what type of assets?
That's right. Yeah, because, you know, to me, when I look at, the question, should I treat my kids equally upon death or whatnot? There are differences in your children.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of not just, not that you love one more. You might love them equally.
Well, here's what I say.
But they are not the same, right?
The ones you like the best, give them the Roth IRAs.
Oh, that's one way of looking at treating your kids unequally. But I think when most people talk about equal, they think 50% of each account to each kid, right? Something along those lines.
It depends how the property's owned. But I think that's what the people think making their estate plans. And the mistake they make often, they go through their will not realizing how much goes outside of the will by beneficiary designation.
Sure.
And again, the type of asset. I just made a little joke about the Roth IRA, but there's a big difference. If somebody's getting $1 million Roth IRA or $1 million traditional IRA, that's a big difference.
Yeah, I think that's the key point, right? In most cases, when people think about treating their children equally, what in their minds conceptually they're doing is taking the Roth and splitting it 50-50. They're
right.
Taking their traditional IRA, splitting it 50-50. Taking their bank accounts, their brokerage accounts, their other taxable accounts, and splitting those 50-50. But I think a lot of times what people don't realize is that the net effect to those children may not really be a 50-50 split. For instance, let's say both children are successful. They're parents are super proud of them, but one is a neurosurgeon and one is an inner city school social worker.
Social worker. I knew you were going to go there.
Well, you know that.
No,
that,
it's a great example. People that do great things, but the market, the society doesn't value it as high.
Yeah, I mean, and those are two important and critical jobs in our world, but we know that they're going to pay drastically differently. So, you know, 30 years in, the neurosurgeon child obviously probably is a, well, maybe not, maybe they spend a little bit more too, but in all likelihood, they would have had an ability to accumulate a lot more, and they may have a lot higher income, et cetera. If we leave 50% of the Roth to each kid and 50% of the traditional IRA to each kid, they're not really getting the same thing, right? Because at the end of the day, the child who's at a higher tax rate with more income is going to net a lot less from those accounts after tax, right?
Right. It depends on their own tax situation. And I don't think anybody takes that into account when they plan out their estate and say, I want everything to be equal.
After taxes, right?
No, they never say that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yep. So, you know, to me, I'll say one of my favorite strategies today of everything is treating children unequally to treat them more equal.
After tax.
After taxes, exactly. And you know the way I look at it, right? Let's just take away brokerage accounts and bank accounts and whatnot, because those receive what's called a step-up in basis. And so just to clear that up, Ed, want to explain what a step-up in basis is?
Well, non-IRA assets. We talk about retirement. We talk about 401ks, IRAs. They never get a step-up in basis. When you inherit an IRA, a 401k, that's all taxable. Whereas if you inherit, say, a brokerage account, non-IRA, that maybe your parents invested $100,000 and now it's worth $10 million, you get it at $10 million. All the accumulated capital gains during their lifetime get stepped up. So you pick it up, you, the beneficiary, picks it up at $10 million. So all of that capital gain is relieved, eliminated at death through something called step-up in basis.
Yeah, I often say death is the ultimate cleanser when it comes to taxes.
But not on retirement accounts.
That's right, not on retirement accounts. So to just to reiterate, if I inherit, let's say, mom bought, 100 shares of some crazy biotech company years ago. It was worth, you know, $100 when she bought it, and now it's worth $10 million. If I inherit that in a taxable brokerage account, I can go out the next day as a beneficiary and sell it with $0 of income taxes.
And then you're
taxes.
Even.
That's it. We're good. There's no tax liability whatsoever. But if I have a $10 million IRA that I inherit, we still owe taxes on the $10 million, right?
And that, as you said before, could be different depending on the beneficiary's brackets.
Yep.
And the beneficiaries will look at each other because I've dealt with them after the parents have passed on. And they say, well, how come he's paying more, I'm paying less? I've also seen problems, you may want to look at this, where parents, especially in their elderly years, they need maybe one child that lives close by and the other's far away, and that's the child that is helping and giving all the support. And they often set up a joint account with that child so they can help them with their bills, maybe long-term care bills and things.
Like instead of a power of attorney or something,
right? Right. And this way they can pay their house bills, maybe if they're in a nursing home, to make life easier. They're not able to do their financial transactions. When that parent dies, that joint account, even though they thought everything was equal, is going to that child.
That's right. Yep.
By operation of law.
Mm-hmm. Those joint accounts just happen
so
automatically.
So that could throw off the equality intention.
I want to circle back to this idea, though, of treating children unequally to treat them more equally. And, you know, the key in this is, you know, sometimes if parents are looking and they say, well, I don't want one kid to think I favor the other one more.
That's exactly what they think. Yeah.
Well, then I think there's two elements here. The first is we have to understand who's involved in this, right? If we're looking at, let's say, traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs, they're really, and let's just make it two kids for a simple example, right? If there's two children, there's three people, right? The two children and the IRS, right? If there's three kids, there's four people, the three kids and the IRS. Ultimately, if we look at what people actually get to spend, their after-tax dollars, which is what really matters, if I treat the IRS unequally, which no one ever seems to have a problem with.
Right.
If I take money from the IRS, it means there's more left for whoever is left, right? If the IRS is going to get 33% of whatever it is in taxes, if I somehow shift things around so that they only get 20%, it means there's 13% left to dole out to the other individuals. So a lot of times, what, especially now, you know, Ed, the Secure Act 2.0, that law that came out just a few years ago, had massive ramifications for post-death distributions for most individuals who are not a spouse, right?
Right, right.
So real quick, right? We went from a lifetime's worth of distributions, taking it out maybe over a beneficiary's 20, 30, 40-year life expectancy. In many cases now, we're down to 10 years,
yeah,
right?
I think you said Secure 2.0. You meant original Secure.
Yes, sorry, the original Secure Act. Too many Secure Acts to keep track of these.
Oh, I thought you referred to that as the Secure OG.
That's right, the OG Secure Act. That's my fault. You know, it's been a lot of tax laws coming. So that's.
But I let you go a little while because I thought, no, he's got a point on Secure 2.0. But
it's a fair point. So the original Secure Act took that, right, and took it down to just 10 years. So now we're in a place where those beneficiaries are going to have, especially if they're higher taxes, you know, and they're in their working years, they're going to be paying a much higher tax rate. If I, let's say, had these two individuals, right, my neurosurgeon child and my social worker child, and I left more of my Roth IRA to the neurosurgeon child and more of my traditional IRA to the child who is a social worker, and again, just using this as an example, but the child with lower tax rate, right?
You'd be moving more to tax equality.
I'm moving more to tax equality, and I could actually do some back of the napkin math to get both kids more.
Right.
Right. That's the key. That's what I always try to talk to people about in this situation, is that you're not treating them unequally to disadvantage one or both of them. You can treat them unequally in a way that gets both children more money. Because again, if the IRS gets less, it gives you more to divide up between those other two kids.
But here's the thing, and we started with the premise, should I treat my children or beneficiaries equally? Mm-hmm. So we went through the tax part. But how do people feel about that?
Mm-hmm.
Even the non-financial stuff. You know, if you're going to do that, I would suggest, I mean, you don't have to, but I always say to parents, you better let the kids know. Because you could have the last thing, I think about this myself, the last thing you want as a parent, you want your kids, they're the rest of you leaving behind, to get along.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think having a family meeting in those circumstances is important. And mom or dad or whoever it is should explain why this is happening.
Right.
Because otherwise you do end up with two unhappy children, right? One who goes, I can't believe it. You know, mom, dad, they loved you more. They left you more money. Look, it's a bigger account balance. And the other kid goes, no, mom loved you more. Look, she left you the account with no taxes. And both of them are miserable, when in reality, they both ended up better off. I mean, think about having that conversation with your children, right? And sitting down
that's
and saying,
the key, yeah.
Hey, listen, you don't need to know, even if you don't want to give them all the details. Just
no.
Listen, I'm leaving more of one account to you and more of this other account to you because I sat down with my financial advisor and we figured out that by doing this, both of you will get more money after taxes, which is what I care about. I've worked really hard my whole life,
right,
and I don't want to see Uncle Sam get any more than they have to. By doing it this way, you will both get more, but I want you to know that this is to help both of you because I love both of you equally.
You know who else they don't want to see getting more money?
Who?
The attorneys.
That's true, too.
After death, when the kids start fighting it out because this wasn't communicated properly.
So, Ed, you mentioned this kind of like just maybe as we're looking to tie up here some loose ends. What are some other ways? So you mentioned this pre-will or pre-death validation that some states now allow. We talked about family meetings or discussions, which I think are critical. And I know a lot of people don't want to talk about their finances with their children, but I think there's got to be some level of conversation there. I think the more open you are, the better. But for those who want to be, close, what are some other ways that people can go about reducing friction after death?
Well, sometimes they want, I've seen, I hate to say it, where they want friction because they had issues with one child.
Okay.
Or, you know, some children need more help. Maybe there's somebody with an addiction problem and they don't want that person. Maybe they're relying on the sibling to, with a trust somehow, to take care of that one because they're worried they'll squander the money. They'll get divorced. They'll get involved in lawsuits. So you have to know who's who with the beneficiaries. And I'll tell you something that almost every client has been worried about when I talk to them. They would always say something like, you know, it's not my kids I'm worried about. It's the ones they marry.
Yep.
Because they're making plans. And
except, hold on, if my wife is listening, except for you, honey, except
yeah,
for you. Okay, good. All right, now you may continue. Go ahead.
Yeah, but that's a real concern because you just said they worked hard. They saved $3, $4 million in an IRA. And the last thing they want is the portion that goes to, say, this child, they get divorced. It goes to somebody they never even met in their lifetime.
Indeed. So any great, you know, words of sage advice that someone could use to help minimize these after death conflicts? Because, you know, we talked about, should you treat your children equally? I think, you know, the implicit question we were asking is, should you treat your children equally if you want them to actually get equal benefit?
That's one thing.
Sometimes you actually do really want to treat your kids very unequally, and that may result
for
in
good
conflict.
Reasons or poor reasons. Or I'll give you another reason. I had a case where a parent loaned a lot of money to one of the children, and in her will she said, well, nobody gets until that's paid off.
Ah, so you hit on actually one of my big ones. I was going to, you know, say some tips. One of my big tips is you do see that a lot with families, especially when they've been able to accumulate dollars.
And they helped one
loans.
Child, but not the others.
That's right.
And they felt bad. They said, well, in essence, this child got more money because I loaned him all this money.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, a lot of times, these things aren't documented. So one of my big tips is, anytime you do an intra-family loan, it should be properly documented and everybody should be aware of the situation, at least to the extent that you feel comfortable. But at the bare minimum, documentation is critical because I see a lot of times after death, I've worked with a lot of individuals where it's like, oh, that was a gift. No, it was a loan. No, that was a gift. No, it was a loan. It was a gift.
Right,
well,
right.
Which child are we asking? The other one is, you know, there are some other legal ways in which you might be able to help this. For instance, in some states, you can use something called an interorum clause, right?
Right, right.
Which effectively is a provision in your will that says, if you or any beneficiary challenges my will after death, then you lose any amount that you would otherwise have gotten.
I think now they say you get a dollar just to show they didn't forget them.
Right. That's you know, it reminds me, I don't know that we have a ton of, you know, time to go into this, but it reminds me of an old joke my grandfather used to tell me. You know, it started off, and I'll go through it very quickly, you know, that they were at the will reading, and the first child up, it goes, and, you know, you get all, you get the, you know, the house, you get $1 million bank account, you get everything. And then they went to the second one, you get a house, you get another $1 million account. And finally they got to, you know, like my brother. It was like my brother, who never had a job and lived with me, who never did anything. He always smoked the finest cigars. Mine, he drove the finest cars. Mine, to my brother Louis, who was such a present person in my life for all these years. Hello, Louis. And that was it. So.
There was actual will that had a version of that. I used to use it in my seminars to Louis or whoever it was in your example. I leave the pleasure of earning a living.
Yeah. All right, so we covered a lot today and we unearthed some important concepts. You know, one of the first is that being or treating your children equally, if you want to do so, may actually mean different things to different people. For instance, you may decide equal to you means I want to leave 50% of my IRA, 50% of my Roth, 50%. Everybody gets the same 50%, and your own tax situation is your own situation. Or you may decide that treating my children equally means I want to get them an equal amount of money to be able to spend on the things that they want to spend on, in which case we might have to take into consideration taxes. Ed, we also talked about the fact that if you do treat your children equally or unequally, you may want to have conversations. I think actually that's just good advice always,
oh, no.
Right?
There has to be communication up front because we're talking about saving people money. As I mentioned, the one you want to cut out is the lawyer after death.
All right. So ultimately, where do you fall on this, Ed? I know different for everybody.
Well, it's different for every parent. That's why you have to have communication. And there are reasons, like I gave some examples, you have a disabled or handicapped child. You know, there are reasons to have different inheritances. But you have to have the communication up front. And the more rock solid that is, the less problems you'll have afterward. And you can rest assured, hopefully, it's more likely your estate plan will get carried out as you wish.
I think ultimately that's the key point. As right. you wish, whatever you do, do it with intention. You want to treat your kids equally? Great. You want to treat your kids unequally? Great. It's your money, your choice. Do it. Do it. It sounds like it's your money. You can get it when you want.
Yeah. yeah. yes. It's but the big point you made there before, document everything.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll leave it there, Ed.
That's right.
Another good episode here of The Great Retirement Debate. Hopefully you took away something to use with you and your family, whether you treat your kids unequally or not.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer for Buckingham Wealth Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information, which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed in corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Buckingham Wealth Partners.